Hello and welcome to Produced By. Just quickly before we begin, if you enjoy the show, please consider supporting it by joining our Patreon. You can choose from a list of memberships and will receive some exciting rewards. Thank you and back to the episode. Hello, Shep. Thank you for joining us today and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Thomas. I'm very excited for this.
So can you please introduce yourself?
Yes, I am Shoaib. I am a personal branding agency founder of Yellow Hippo. We essentially build personal brands for creators, CEOs, C-suite execs, founders, and help them scale on visibility on LinkedIn through storytelling, value-driven, and case study content. I also host a podcast, my own podcast, that's called Rebels. We're just about to launch season two, so I'm very excited for that. And I've just announced also that I'm a strategic advisor for a B2B tech startup, which again, very exciting. Started my journey about 3 years ago, just through organically through LinkedIn. But I'm sure we're going to get into like specifics of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's like a lot of exciting things to discuss. But before we dive into it, I always wondered, why is your company called Yellow Hippo?
Great question. There's no like, you know, particular reason. There's kind of a few mini reasons. So one of them is when I launched the business, personal branding, you know, wasn't really a buzzword like it is today. Mm-hmm. There's maybe three or four other known agencies who did personal branding, but it was fairly novel. It was fairly new at the time. This was Jan 2022. You know, that kind of around that time when I started freelancing. Mm-hmm. So I wanted a name that kind of stood out, and Yellow Hippo. Obviously, it's like you never see a yellow hippo, so it stands out. But equally, as soon as you hear the name, you don't know what the business is, so it piques your interest and curiosity. And it's a great conversation starter, like you have just exemplified in this conversation. Most of the sales calls I have, that's the first question that people ask. So I'm joking, a banter about it. And then we, you know, get into the core. I think it's a really good way just to build rapport. And then mm-hmm. on another level, yellow's my favourite colour. Hippos are my favourite animal. Put the two together. Take away the W, though. A lot of people always forget there's no W in yellow.
That was the next question. Why is it missing?
So there's no W in yellow because that domain was taken, to be honest. And the website domain. But equally, I think it just looks aesthetically nicer when there's, you know, five letters of each word. They both have a double consonant and then an O at the end, like yellow, mm-hmm. hippo. So, yeah, that's the reason.
Sounds good to me and makes sense. It actually reminds me of a book from Seth Godin, Purple Cow. Yeah. I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but it's a similar concept, so it's really smart.
Yeah, I've definitely heard of the book now since calling the business Yellow Hippo. It's been mentioned to me a few times, so yeah.
Yep, sounds awesome. So I always like to start with your background. So can you tell us more about where you come from, maybe something about your childhood as well?
For sure. So I am from Pakistani heritage, but born in the UK, born in West Yorkshire. Near Leeds. I, you know, state school educated, didn't really come from a family of business owners. My dad's an engineer, my mum works kind of part-time in the school. Kind of did quite well at school. I did quite well at school, but I never thought I'd start a business. That was never the plan. I was always kind of business-minded and loved the concept, especially of like marketing and branding and community building, but never really, you know, pursued it. Academically, I did a geography degree at university, so very, very different.
Really? Geography?
Yes, geography.
I'm actually also interested in geography. It was my favorite subject at school, so I'm surprised.
It's a good subject. It's good. I chose it because I enjoyed it rather than I saw a career in that field. And I always thought I'd get into marketing business in some kind of way. I've never really had a set plan, though, to get there. And then what happened was I was... did a year in industry, so like a work experience internship for a marketing agency in London, moved there, absolutely loved it. It was a very small company, a startup, got a lot of responsibility, had a great team around me, got a lot of creative freedom to do loads of different things from newsletter marketing to copywriting, blog writing, social media, events. So it's really like a whistle-stop tour of marketing as an industry. Got a lot of good opportunities off the back of that. And then I started posting on LinkedIn That was the trigger for all of this. I started posting on LinkedIn because the pandemic hit, and I was thinking, oh, you know, it might be difficult to get a graduate job at this time. So I started posting on LinkedIn a little bit. I then created a little ebook to help people who were in the same position as me, help other students start on LinkedIn and create content and build their brand. It was a terrible ebook, actually, looking back at it. It was great for the time, but you know, LinkedIn's moved on massively, so I don't even know where it is at the moment. Like, I think there's, you can't even access it.
We'll be curious to find it and see what.
No. Let's keep that in the depths of the internet. But you know, I launched that, and you know, maybe like 500 people have downloaded it, which was pretty good. At the time, I was just a student. You know, I didn't really have a platform, a voice, or a following. And then somebody saw that ebook, who also at the time was starting a personal branding agency. He reached out to me. Said, look, I've got a couple of clients, I need some support. He was also a student at the time as well. So we were two students kind of juggling a bit of personal branding on LinkedIn with our degrees. That founder went on to scale his agency. It's called Corogo. Sam Winsbury is the founder. So I was kind of, I guess, his first employee in a way. Did that for kind of 6-7 months, and then just had a different approach to personal branding, had different ambitions with where I wanted to go, had a lot of opportunities to come through my personal brand on LinkedIn. So I thought, okay, you know, I handed in my notice and I thought, I'm going to give this a go. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to give this a go. And now it's been, what, three, four months. And, you know, well, the rest is history, as they say. Yeah.
And just as a little side note, I'm curious because... Before, when you mentioned you studied also geography, so what did you have in mind? That what kind of career would you want to pursue in geography?
I didn't have anything in mind, to be honest. I didn't have a plan. I didn't, you know, I've never had a specific career that I wanted to pursue. I did geography because I enjoyed geography. I went to university because I was told that's a thing you do. Looking back now, I probably wouldn't go to university, and I'd get maybe a job, an apprenticeship, and work in a startup and scale that way. But yeah, there was no real intention behind it, to be honest. It was just, I enjoy this, so let's do it. I'm a big believer in everything. Like, if you enjoy it, great. If you don't enjoy it, change something so you do enjoy it. And I apply that same logic in the business and how I run my business day to day as well.
Yeah. And did you then finish your degree successfully?
Yeah, I finished my degree. I got a first, which is like the top grade you can get. You know, did really well. It was a good university. And then I actually got a grad scheme with a corporate company, Johnson & Johnson, which is like a pharmaceutical company. Yep. I rejected that. And that's when I started working full time with Sam, for him, with his personal branding agency. I did that for kind of 7-8 months, and obviously started on my own.
Yeah. And why did you actually start with the LinkedIn in the first place? Because, for example, from my own experience, back then I saw LinkedIn more as a, I don't want to say boring, but more like a corporate social media. What made you to start there?
100%. It was definitely a very corporate jobs platform. That's what it was. It was a careers platform. It's very professional, very dull. To be honest, it wasn't a creator or a content platform like it is today. I was on there because I was just trying to get like work experience and build my CV and hopefully get a job in an industry that I enjoyed, which was, I was kind of leaning towards marketing. So there was no real intention. I never said, you know, I'm going to build my brand. I didn't even know actually what personal brand was. I don't think that word was like in my vocabulary at the time. started posting on there with the hopes of something could happen potentially. I'd maybe get job invites, or I'd build a bit of a CV or a bit of a reputation. So if somebody did then search my name on LinkedIn, there'd be something there that would separate me from millions of other students who were also graduating during a global pandemic.
And for us who back then weren't present there, or maybe were but not really active, can you try to compare it to what was it like before and what was it like now on LinkedIn?
Wow, very different is the answer. back then, I mean, there were some creators. There were definitely some people creating content on the platform, and, you know, copywriters and people who were just like documenting the journey. It's really cool now. But some of them are still doing it today. A lot of them kind of stopped posting and, you know, went on with their lives in a different direction. Mm-hmm. It was very, I would say the platform wasn't as booming as it is today. There was not a lot of engagement going on. I think a lot of people used, you know, logged in, sent a few DMs, applied for a few jobs, and then logged out, and that was it. Mm-hmm. Today, I feel like LinkedIn as a platform is part of people's everyday. If you're in the creator marketing entrepreneurship space, it's the platform for you to create content on. But not only create content, it's also the platform to generate leads, generate PR opportunities, attract investment for a company, attract talent for your team, source opportunities, generate leads, find customers. You know, the pool of opportunity is immense, and it's right at your fingertips. So today, obviously, there's even more types of content. So you've got like different formats, the introduction of video content. That was very, very, you know, it wasn't even really a thing back then. A few people were sharing video content. But today, I think people are a lot more strategic about building their brand intentionally rather mm-hmm. than just posting job announcements or I'm looking for this or I've got this. So it's a great time for me to start building my brand then because I got early mover advantage. I was able to leverage, like, I was able to understand the platform quicker than most people at that time because I'd been doing it for so long. Mm-hmm. So I was able to kind of find contacts, grow my network a little bit, understand how to use the different features, optimize my profile, etc.
Yep. And were there any creators that were inspiration for you back then?
Creators who were inspiration? I'd say the one that kind of stood out to me was Sophie Miller. From Pretty Little Marketer.
Yeah.
Funny story, actually. Before I started posting on LinkedIn and got into personal branding, I worked for, you know, that marketing company that I mentioned earlier. And we actually connected then, me and Sophie. So Sophie, again, was an early mover. I remember when her business had, Pretty Little Marketer, maybe 1,000 Instagram followers. And now her community is like, across different platforms, it's like 300K plus. Yeah. That was amazing to see. Every day I'd go on like Instagram, go, Jesus, she's like getting like 700 followers in like a day, and I saw that scale, and I was like, wow, there's an opportunity here. And then I think later she moved on to LinkedIn and leveraged platform building there. So mm-hmm. I actually started a few pages on Instagram before I was on LinkedIn. Nothing really happened. I wasn't consistent. Maybe if I was consistent, I'd have an alternative version of Pretty Little Marketer, who knows? but, you know, I found LinkedIn works because the algorithm was amazing. There's a lot of organic growth potential. The features on the platform allow you to do a lot. The way the profile is built in terms of, like, the UX allows you to essentially treat it as a sales landing page. And also, the best thing about LinkedIn is the audience. You have direct access to key decision makers at practically any company. So the return on investment and the return on time investment is like undeniable, especially if it's a B2B business service industry. Obviously, if you're targeting customers and you need mass customers, Instagram, TikTok, that's the kind of platform to be. But for B2B creators or B2B agencies, or just general entrepreneurs, investors, you know, LinkedIn is the bread and butter of what we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we will discuss more LinkedIn, but want to come back also to your journey, how you were starting with your own business. So can you expand more about the beginnings of starting Yellow Hippo?
Yeah, so after I quit my job, I started freelancing. So the first 6 months of Yellow Hippo were actually freelancing. I didn't have a company name or company brand. Mm-hmm. I remember I put a video post on LinkedIn, and it was me in my parents' like living room with just on a mobile phone, did some really bad subtitles on some free app on my phone, shared that, and I basically just said, like, I'm going freelance and I don't know what this is going to mean or if it's even going to work out, but here I am, I'm going freelance, these are my services. And then within, like, 2 weeks, I had about 4 clients signed, which is amazing. But obviously, I built my brand before this, so these things didn't just happen in a vacuum overnight. So it's really important to mention that I was building my brand for a good 2 years before this happened. And so I already had people who were kind of aware of me, of what I do, had seen my brand scale as well. So I had the proof of that. So I worked with a few clients early on, over-delivered, undercharged massively. You know, I was charging like £300-£400 a month for content and getting results like 1 million impressions a month on content, and some of my clients are getting like 3,000 followers in a month, 3,000-4,000 followers a month. So they had amazing return on investment. What that meant was I was able to turn them results into case studies, and then I shared the case studies on LinkedIn. So it had basically a snowball effect. Mm-hmm. I did work, undercharged, over-delivered, turned it into case studies, shared it on LinkedIn, got more clients, and just repeated that process. Mm-hmm. By month three, I'd say I had about 20 clients, 22 clients, and it was just me at that point. Yeah. That's when I was like in peak business building mode. And at first, the whole point of me starting a business was to earn the same amount of money as I was in my old job, but have more time freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And every entrepreneur says that, and then the opposite happens, right? if you're successful and you have a bit of luck, you earn way more money than you would in a 9-to-5, and yeah. You end up having no time freedom. You end up working crazy hours. Mm-hmm. So I started hiring a team at that point. I hired some VAs. I brought in an accountant. I partnered with a designer to do some work for me and some video creators. And then I decided, okay, now's the time I need to turn this into a company, not just me, because I thought it brought a lot more credibility, and it's distinguished me from a lot of other creators on the platform who had achieved good results for themselves and were then selling personal branding as a service, because I'd, you know, actually had proof that I was able to do this for a range of clients in different industries from different demographics, and we had cold, hard evidence, proof of the success that we'd had. So I thought, let's amplify that authority that we've built through results, through brand. And that's when I created Yellow Hippo.
Mm-hmm. And as you said that you undercharge and over-delivered, was that your strategy or you didn't know how to price it properly?
At the time, it was a strategy because there was two or three main personal branding agencies in the space and I knew all their prices. So I thought, okay, I've worked in one of these agencies myself as well. I mm-hmm. know how to do this. I've got the results for a few clients in terms of case studies. And but what I didn't have was company brand. I didn't have a team. I didn't have the systems and processes in place. And I didn't look like an entrepreneur, if that makes sense.
Yes.
I didn't have the slick polish. It was very much me, a 22-year-old, posting on LinkedIn, like selfies, crap video content that was really poorly filmed. But like I said, I had the results to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was never an intentional thing to like really underprice myself, but I knew I had to undercharge a little bit for me to win clients. And over time, obviously, I incrementally increased my prices. And now the same service I delivered 2.5 years ago, I charged 4 times the price for.
Mm.
Like minimum. So I think a lot of it again comes with like the authority you build through your brand and people seeing your content, and perception, you know, really determines value in many ways. So as long as you've got the results, you can then scale that value exponentially through brand, which is obviously why personal branding is so effective.
If you want to boost your online presence, check out our digital marketing agency called Trailblazed. You can also enroll in our Skillshare course called The 10 Tips on How to Succeed in Your Creative Career, which was inspired by the podcast. Lastly, make sure to subscribe to our weekly newsletter called Creative Spotlight to stay up to date with the show and more. Links are in the show notes. Thanks.
And can you introduce a bit more what kind of services were you providing?
Yes, so it's kind of the same thing we do today we did back then. So ghostwriting LinkedIn content, managing the growth strategy in terms of like content pillars and positioning, doing a lot of engagement on accounts as well. So industry engagement, connecting with the right people, creating a lot of storytelling led content, essentially building in public. I was using the model that I'd done for my own business and applying it to other more established business owners. The benefit to them was they had all the results. They had all the teams, the 10 years worth of experience, the stories, the successes, the failures. So they had everything there to work with, but it just didn't have somebody who understood the LinkedIn algorithm, who understood content creation mm-hmm. and the different modes of storytelling, you know, the techniques and methods that really work in terms of the algorithm. So I was able to essentially interview on board those clients, do a lot of research, work one-to-one quite collaboratively with them. Until I was there, I essentially became their second brain, or like a diary for them.
Yep.
So I would interview them, they send me voice notes, I would turn that into content. Once they start seeing the results within a couple of weeks, we scaled up. Today, we offer a bit more in terms of the service. So we do all of that, but we also do, I've built websites, I've built ebooks, lead magnets, done some design work for clients. We've even done some Instagram work in the past, TikTok video scripts, directing photo shoots, that kind of thing. So we essentially didn't add the service with purpose. It was more so we'd worked with a client. They'd said, oh, I really like what you guys have done with my LinkedIn. Can you support me with this? Can you advise me on this? And so naturally and quite organically, we diversified our services because we could do the work and clients trusted us enough to reach out to us rather than other agencies for that.
And how many employees does the Yellow Hippo have now?
So we have three staff. So two full-time staff. I have an executive assistant who's brilliant, and she's kind of working part-time supporting me and, you know, reporting of clients and doing quite a few different things. So that's the direct team. And sometimes we work partner with a graphic designer or a partner with a video editor. Obviously, I'm an accountant as well in the team. But in terms of full-time staff day-to-day, there's three of us, including myself and Laurel, who's our VA.
And when it comes to your role, are you still creative or are you, you know, business person, or what is your job like?
A bit of everything. A bit of everything. I do write a lot of the content for a few clients. I review everything. I edit everything that goes out. So I see everything that goes to a client. I think that's really important because a lot of clients work with me for me and for my personal brand. And so I never want to fully outsource things and not have that kind of personal relationship. We actually capped the number of clients we take on at any one point. So my intention is not to scale the agency massive. I think there's other agencies who've done that very well. There's other agencies who have done that very badly as well. My intention is to do neither and work with a select few clients on a more in-depth basis. So my role is writing, editing, managing strategy, I'd say, is kind of the key one. So clients will message me directly and say, okay, I've got this launch coming up, or I've got this event coming up, I've got a webinar, and how do we market this? How do we infuse this messaging through my brand? Or I'm launching another business, can you help with the kind of the direction of the marketing of that? So a bit of strategy as well. And then also, like, a lot of my time goes into my content creation as well.
For your personal profile, right?
For my personal profile. So content for me, the podcast Rebels, which is season one was last year, season two is about to launch, and then also obviously all the business stuff that comes with it. So all the sales calls that I do, systems and ops, I also do a bit of a 360, like, generalist, I would say, but I can drop in and out of things very quickly. So if I need to be here, I'll be there, and if I need to, you know, my attention needs to be somewhere else, I can divert quickly. We have a small agile team, like, we're quite dynamic, and everybody's quite proactive as well, so it doesn't matter too much if my attention needs to go elsewhere. It doesn't actually the delivery or the quality of work produced.
And when it comes to creative side versus the business side, is there one that you enjoyed more?
I love the strategy behind brands. I think I don't talk about this actually enough, I think, on my own LinkedIn, but I've really enjoyed in the last 6 months working on my own brand. Because over the last 2.5 years, I've built over 100 brands for other people. And now I'm, like, falling in love with building my own brand again, because I just didn't have the time or the energy or the headspace to do that before. But now we've got data as an agency, which is amazing. We've, you know, written over 10,000 LinkedIn posts, so we have some solid data that shows us what works and what doesn't work. I'm implementing a lot of that with my own brand now, so I enjoy that. But then I do also enjoy, like, the growth element, taking sales calls, meeting different people, finding new opportunities, and seeing how the team and also the business, you know, scales over time. We're not going to, you know, we're not scaling fast purposefully and intentionally. I don't want to do that, but it's nice to know that if we needed to, we could jump straight in and we could scale.
Yeah. And you've got all the best knowledge, you got all the inside experience, and now you can apply it to your own profile and make the best use of it.
100%. I mean, the priority will always be clients in terms of everything we do. And that's just the way that I work and the agency is built. Mm-hmm. But now, because we cap the number of clients we take on, because we have a team, it's not just me anymore, I'm able to invest a little bit more time in my brand and use my LinkedIn as a bit of an experiment, really. See what works, see what doesn't work, try different content formats, and then apply some of that learning also back to the clients to help their accounts grow quicker.
Yeah. As we discussed both your company and your personal stuff and also the podcast, how do you actually manage to stay on top of everything, do everything 100% and, you know, have such great results?
Good question. This week has not been a great week in terms of balance. So I try to maintain balance. This week has that didn't happen. But typically, I mean, there's a few things that I've done. I've implemented a few like rules that I make myself follow and set better boundaries. So I'll say no more than I say yes. I'll say no to things about 80% of the time. I say yes about 20% of the time. And that's because before in the past, I felt like I was obliged to do stuff. I felt obliged to take this client on. I felt obliged to say yes to this opportunity. Whereas now I'm much more comfortable and confident in what we do. I know where my skills are and I know when I need to outsource. So outsourcing has helped. Some of the design work, some of the accountancy, some of the videography, they're not my strong suits, but we have great partners that we work with. Obviously got a team to support as well, which has helped massively. But more of it is just, you know, I think it's a confidence thing. It comes over time. Because I've done it now for 2.5 years, I know what things I should be doing. I know what I shouldn't be doing. I know when I'm procrastinating as well. I know when I've said yes to something to avoid doing something else. I can spot that now. So I make sure I don't do that. And then equally, you know, week on week, it's just making sure I turn away from work as well. I feel like when I'm in a habit of working constantly, I crash. And that has happened a few times. So now I make sure that there's evenings in the week, weekends I take off. I try to be as flexible as possible. I don't take many meetings either. One, because I don't think you need a lot of meetings in business. And secondly, I don't really enjoy having meetings. So yeah, there's a few things.
So what is it that helps you to switch off?
Switch off? Just like chilling with friends. Music, I go to a lot of music festivals, concerts, travel. I've got 4 holidays booked in the next 4 weeks, which I'm very excited for. Change of scenery. I struggle to work in one place for a long time. So moving between places is really good for me.
You like working in cafes, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I like right now, for example, I'm filming this podcast in my bedroom because I don't even have a proper office. I like to move about a lot. So different cities, different coffee shops, different environments. Mm-hmm. So working with different people as well. I very much love the concept of being a digital nomad. I can pack everything I need in one suitcase and go away and do it, which is actually what I'm doing over the next 4 weeks. So yeah.
Do you want to reveal where are you about to go or not?
I am going to Valencia my EA, my executive assistant, is getting married. I've never met her, but I'm going to meet her on her wedding day, which is a funny story. So she's based in Valencia. She's getting married there, so I'm going to go there. And then I've got, can I even remember off the top of my head? I've got Paris. I'm still umming and ahhing about that one. But there's a conference there that I've been invited to, so I might go there. I've got Malaga in Spain. I've got Italy the week after, and then New York the week after that. So,
oh, wow.
Five.
That sounds awesome and exciting.
Yeah, like, amazing. A year ago or 2 years ago, I definitely couldn't have done this because I was working in the business rather than on the business. I was doing like crazy days. My workload still today is like always full. My to-do list is never empty, but I have way more control over things. So I'm able to, you know, work abroad, take some days off totally away from my laptop, which, you know, would definitely recommend. But I think it's important at the beginning that you have to go through that hustle mode. Like, it really does fast track your growth. You learn a lot in a short space of time, and you can be 5 steps ahead of other people who are starting at the same time as you. So I don't regret working really long hours, hard work, taking on loads of clients, because it was amazing. It was an amazing learning curve. Mm-hmm. Obviously now that's not sustainable, and now that I've got a team, my responsibilities have shifted, my priorities have also shifted, and I found more purpose as I've been on this journey.
Are you even thinking of moving somewhere for a longer period of time?
Potentially next year. Discussed that with a few friends, potentially Southeast Asia, for like 2 to 3 months and testing that out. But again, I like having the flexibility. You know, with the business, it's fully remote. The team is international. We've got Gabriel in South Africa, Charlotte in Newcastle, so in the UK with me, and then we've got Laurel in Valencia. So I don't have an office. I'm not obliged to be anywhere at any given time. You know, some of our clients we've never even met in person. In fact, most of our clients we've never met in person, because what the model of our business works, we're able to work remotely, and we have really good systems in place and communication processes and systems that allow us to work very collaboratively, and in depth with clients, where we almost feel like they are friends, even though we've never met most of them. So yeah, I have the capacity to, you know, pack a suitcase and just move somewhere, which I love. And I'm not saying I'm going to do that all the time, because, you know, the business is a priority, and it's a lot harder, actually. Maybe this is something that people don't mention. It's a lot harder to, when you're out of your normal routine, to like find deep focus.
Yeah, because it's, yeah, I understand, because it's just different. But I was wondering, how did you hire people? Because it may be a bit difficult if you don't know the person, if you don't meet the person from face to face. So can you tell us more about it?
Yeah, a lot of it is like, well, the first one was recommended to me through somebody else. And there's kind of a call. And to be fair, at that point, I was so overwhelmed with business that I just needed help, and I wasn't, well, I didn't do like a formal interview or anything. I was like, okay, you say you're a copywriter, here's what we're going to do, we start on Monday, let's do it. So that was like, I just jumped straight in, and he's still with me like 2 years later now. So that worked out. And then the other two in my team, Charlotte and Laurel, they followed me on LinkedIn for a while and engaged with my content. So they understood the platform, the landscape, the creator economy. And they supported my content a lot over the years. And I thought I'm going to give them a shot, you know, because they've done that. And yeah.
Yep, it makes sense, yeah. And when it comes to your podcast, why did you actually start? Or what was, you know, your motivation behind it?
You know what? I started because I thought this is going to be fucking fun. I thought this is going to be fun. Let's do it. Why not?
Was it fun?
Yeah, it's been really fun. That is one thing I can guarantee, it's been really fun. Sometimes it's been a bit stressful, the like post-editing and production and all that stuff. But when I sit in that chair and I have a guest next to me, I love it. Absolutely love it. And so I would love to do it forever. I'd love to do it. We're actually just in the process of finding sponsors for season 2.
Nice.
If you have some good sponsors, you know, I'd continue the podcast for as long as I could. As long as I was enjoying it, I'd continue it. And at the moment, I'm really enjoying it.
And do you do it all by yourself, or do you outsource like editing, I don't know, booking the guests and stuff?
Yeah, it's fully outsourced. I don't touch editing. I just don't have the time to do it, to be honest.
Yeah.
A lot of the production, we work with a studio, so it's all set up. I go in, sit down in the chair with my guest. I still source the guests and do a lot of the marketing and branding around it, but we definitely have support with that, because there's no way, you know, a podcasting is a full-time job in itself, so I definitely have support with that.
Do you want to introduce podcast a bit more? What is it focused on? What type of guests do you invite?
Yeah, so it's called Rebels, and it is designed for anybody who just wants to get inspired, informed, motivated to develop business-wise or in terms of personal growth. So we have a range of guests from kind of all different backgrounds, mainly in marketing, but not strictly marketing, and people who have built something amazing from something very little. So the whole point of Rebels is people have gone against the grain. So we've had guests who, you know, didn't go to university, came from like a very underprivileged backgrounds, maybe even made some bad choices in life, and then went on to build something incredible through like tenacity, grit, personal determination. And so it's really inspiring, a lot of the episodes. And we tap into loads of different topics like entrepreneurship, leadership, mental health, fitness and well-being, work-life balance. And there's a lot of practical tips in there as well. So it kind of juggles personal storytelling, which gives a lot of like, inspiration. And then also like actionable practical tips that people can apply in their day-to-day lives. Because I struggled to find a podcast myself that did both. Mm-hmm. It was either very storytelling based about a person, or it was very like, this is how you do this. This is a tip for this. And I wanted to blend those two together.
Mm-hmm. What podcasts or podcasters are your inspiration?
Great question. I love Mel Robbins.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily like somebody I try to emulate in my podcast, but I love listening to her podcast. Honestly, I don't listen to a lot of podcasts. There's loads out there. I see clips and stuff, but I think with me, like when we started the podcast, there was no real strategy behind it. I just thought this is going to be fun. I'm just going to message a few people on LinkedIn, see what happens. And it kind of snowballed from that. So there was no like sit down, let's look at the data. Let's look what other people are doing. Let's carve out a strategy and a plan. It really is like we're building this in public. Like mm-hmm. what you see on LinkedIn, like the chaos of it all, that is what is going on. For example, season 2 was supposed to launch 2 weeks ago. It's still not, the first episode is still not uploaded to YouTube and Spotify. Like things move on quickly. This is like the chaos of trying to juggle like mm-hmm. two businesses at the same time.
I think it's honestly totally understandable after we heard what you're juggling and the running a business and this. So it makes sense.
I think also I've stopped applying pressure to myself to do certain things. So season 1, it was a bi-weekly podcast. So there was eight episodes and then a bonus episode with Luke Matthews, which absolutely blew up. Season 2, we're going to have 8 episodes again with a bonus episode. And I know what the bonus episode is going to be, but I'm not sharing that yet. But it's very, very, very exciting. But when I film the podcast, record them and release them, that's still unknown as of yet.
Yes.
Because I don't want to share something if I feel like it's really, to the quality I need it to be. I don't want to rush anything. So I'll drop the episodes as and when they're ready. Almost like, I guess it'll be a little bit of a surprise to people. They'll just wake up one day and go on.
And at least helps to build expectations and, we're eagerly awaiting.
Yes. It's been amazing, though. Like, the response from season 1 was amazing. And again, I had no podcasting experience. All the episodes are unscripted. So when I sit down in the chat, I have no questions. Mm-hmm. Apart from the last one, which I ask all my guests. But everything else is just a very organic conversation. Mm-hmm. But the feedback's been brilliant. So that's what really inspired me to do season 2 because of the reception we got.
Yeah. And have you got a dream guest? Would it be Mel Robbins?
A dream guest, wow. I've never thought of that question. That's such a good question. Who really inspires me? I honestly, I couldn't think on the spot. I think what the guest has to have is a really powerful story.
Yeah.
So if somebody comes on and is unwilling to share that story and be personal, again, this is when the whole personal branding thing comes into play. I need somebody who's willing to divulge like the deepest, darkest extremes of their life, like the amazing things, but not the amazing things as well.
Mm-hmm.
And like the full real like spectrum of life experience, of business experience. They're the type of guests that I want on Rebels. People who have no filter. They come on, they're really transparent. They're not, they don't have like an ulterior motive. They're just there to be really honest, be vulnerable at times.
Mm-hmm.
If that's part of their story, and just give something to the audience, to the listeners.
Yep, that's completely understandable. And I would be curious, the same question, but when it comes to your business and the marketing, what's your inspiration in these areas?
When it comes to like the marketing of the business, it's really fully through my brand. So the personal brand is our marketing channel. My LinkedIn is 100% our marketing channel. everything we've done has been inbound. I've never done a Google ad, a paid ad, you know, paid newsletters or anything like that, or you know, paid marketing. It's all been, I'm creating content on my LinkedIn. People from that go to the website, you know, Google us, DM me on LinkedIn. So the actual strategy, there hasn't really been one, because I realised my personal brand can do all the work. In the future, if I wanted to scale, obviously I would look at other marketing channels to scale more effectively, increase the, you know, the repeatability of lead acquisition, and also to secure like a reliable source and income of leads. But at the moment, that's not our goal. So my brand is doing more than enough work. We actually have a waiting list of clients willing to work with us. So that's just fully organic through my personal brand.
And when it comes to some specific people or creators or companies that you like to follow for their content or for or even motivation or inspiration, can you name any?
On LinkedIn, I would say people like Leah Turner was a big inspiration when I first started, and she was also the first guest on my podcast, which is a full circle moment.
Yeah, pretty cool that you managed to invite her on, and she was like...
Sophie Miller was a big inspiration as well. Carla McNeilage is also a big inspiration in terms of the way she writes and tells stories. And, you know, there's loads of people. Elements of Luke Matthews' brand I also really like. There's elements that I equally don't like and don't want to use in my brand, but it worked for him, and I, you know, 100% admire what he's built. And Lara Costa has done some cool stuff as well. There's a lot of my clients that I'm really inspired by. Like clients that we have today, clients we've worked with in the past, because all my clients are founders, creators, senior leaders. You know, when I started my business, I didn't have that life experience.
Yeah.
So a lot, you know, I say that my clients have been my like unofficial business mentors and business coaches, because I'm on a call with them asking them about their business, and through that process very organically, I'm learning a lot that I can then apply to my own business. That's a real advantage when you work in the personal branding space.
Yeah. And are there any specific projects or clients that you worked with or you worked on and for some reason are worth mentioning? Maybe it was something funny or something that you particularly enjoy?
We did a Instagram brand audit. It's different to LinkedIn, but there's one of our clients who, their Instagram page has over a million followers, and we did a brand audit for them. And they wanted to kind of re-energize their page, increase following and diversify their content, and they needed a bit of a strategy. So that was cool because we did that brand audit for them. And like, even to this day, we're seeing them implement the things we told them a year ago, and like how they've brought to life like a 15-page report that we've created, and they've actually done it, and we can see amazing results off the back of it. So that's been pretty cool. There's also like some kind of case studies that have just been brilliant. So one of our clients, two co-founders, we took them from practically zero presence on LinkedIn. Now between them, they have over 100K followers. A third of their business income comes through LinkedIn, and they're making £3 to £4 million a year. So that's £1 million organically through two founder profiles that we essentially launched and have worked with for over a year. So that was amazing. And there's another client of ours who we've worked with for now I signed her in the first 3 weeks of me starting a business, and we're still working together to this day. And she's planted loads of amazing opportunities, keynote speaking internationally with brands like SAP, The Economist, PwC, you know, really big credible Amazon business, really big credible brands. So it's amazing to see like how the credibility we've built through LinkedIn has supported the PR, the brand awareness, the opportunities that have come. This person already was an amazing expert in their field, but having that online brand as well has really elevated what's been able to come out of it. They now also, we've helped them launch a second business based on the back of the success of their LinkedIn.
Yeah. Wow. Sounds like amazing work. Yeah. And it will be a shame not to ask you, but can you share some LinkedIn tips and advice and maybe something for people that are looking to start there?
Yes. Some quick tips, like when you're creating content, create for the reader. Very obvious when everybody says this, but make people feel seen in your content. Whether it's someone in your ICP that you're trying to sell to, what are their problems? What are they facing? Agitate those problems. How does it feel? What is their lived experience of what you are describing? When people feel seen in their content, and when they trust that you understand their problem, it's much easier for them to trust that you will have the solution.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one piece of advice. Be personable. Again, very obvious. A lot of people say it, but work with universal themes, things that are mass relatable, things that people can relate to. So, you know, failure, success, mental health, leadership, entrepreneurship, culture, marketing, you know, all these things, everybody has a touch point with. That you're either affected by these things or you affect them. So injecting your personal story and opinion and statement into those bigger themes helps you, A, be seen by lots of people and be relevant to a lot of people, but equally, it helps people understand you, and your content gets distinguishable from everybody else's content in that field. So never sit on the fence is another one I'd say. Be bold with your opinions, be honest, because if you're trying to build following or build community, you have to have something that you stand for. There has to be purpose to what you're saying or doing. If you sit on the fence, you're not going to really attract either side. It's very neutral. And equally, be consistent. I've been doing this for 4.5 years now. And so some people, you know, expect to achieve success over
results. Yeah.
But I'm seeing, even to this day, like this week, somebody messaged me who's been connected with me on LinkedIn for 3 years, who has never engaged with my content. I didn't even know this person existed. And they want to work with me now, 3 years on. So the effects of personal branding are long term. You've got to be in it for the long game.
Yeah. Sounds great. Yeah, great tips. Something that I will also need to learn from. And as you've been through quite a few podcasts as a guest, is there maybe a question that no one ever asked you, or maybe something that you wanted to share? And so if there is such one, you have space now.
I've been asked a lot of questions. I'd probably say, I mean, something that I'm really passionate on now is like healthy hustle. So like hustling, but with purpose, ultimately. So it's easy to get lost in the chase, especially on a platform like LinkedIn, where you're chasing kind of arbitrary goals. So, you know, I want to hit XK a month. People set a goal like that, but they don't understand why they want that goal. And I used to do it as well. That's why I can, like, make this comment, because that person was me. And then I hit that goal, and then I set another goal, and then I hit that goal, and set another goal. And I realized, okay, this is never going to end.
Yeah, like never-ending chase.
Exactly. And the only thing I'm doing in this process is losing time, sacrificing my health and well-being, and having like a lot of stress like in my life. So now I think, you know, I'll just say it's very important that whatever you're building, build it with purpose and intention. Does it help you get closer to your goals? What are those goals? Are they like realistic goals, or are they goals that somebody else has that you think should be your goal? And then reverse engineer from that. I think, okay, what do I need to live this type of lifestyle? And for me, that's, you know, time flexibility, time freedom, financial security, and the ability to work with loads of interesting people. Now, for that, I don't need to earn millions of pounds a year to achieve that. So I'm not going to kill myself in the process trying to do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that. And if you want to, you know, hit like 5, 10, 15 billion pound companies, amazing, if that's your goal. But equally, it doesn't have to be your goal.
Yep, amazing, great piece of advice. And to be aware of time, can you share where people can follow you or your company, or even tease your upcoming work?
Okay, so on LinkedIn, Shoaib Ahmed, Yellow Hippo is the company name, so www.yellowhippo.co.uk without the W. Rebels by Shoaib Ahmed is on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, but everything's on my LinkedIn. If you click the link in my bio, everything is linked up there.
Yep, sounds awesome. I will add it to the show notes and make sure so that people can find it if they want to follow you. So I want to say a huge thank you. It was a really privilege that you joined me, because I'm also one of the people who've been following you for a while. You are inspirational for me. I enjoy your content. So thank you so much for your time. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app, get in touch to provide your feedback, or share any ideas for future guests. Thank you, and see you soon.